and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. My name is James Gilmore. It's up to episode number 331, I think. Joining me today is Harry Slater.
Hello!
And only Harry Slater, because when you've got a Harry Slater, you don't need anything.
You really don't. I'm surprised you turned up. I'd have done it all on my own.
Oh, sweet. I'll be off then.
All right, see ya.
I've got games to play. Peter is not here because he is on holiday. Danny is not here in the chat room either, if you're watching us on Twitch, because he's in the Tokyo Game Show, looking at mainly plastic things. If you follow us on Facebook or Twitter, you'd have seen retweets of Danny standing in the middle of Japanese tat stores, which is what I'm calling them. I know technically they're sort of probably novelty video game stores. They're called something, but basically plastic tat is what they're full of. And he's got that look on his face of like Andy Dufresne when he climbed out at the end of the Shawshank Redemption, and he's in the rain going, oh, like that, freedom. That's what Danny looks like when he's looking at amiibos.
Yes, he looks completely deranged.
But so happy.
Yes.
Saw his little face.
Aww.
I think there's a reason he's going to come back with absolutely no money or clothes.
I don't think he went with any money.
Well,
he's just been finding other ways to get amiibo.
Well, he's going
to
come back with no money, lots of amiibo, and a criminal record.
Yeah.
So not much in the way of updates this week. This is instead something of a public service announcement. So EA has started to pull games off of the App Store. Have you noticed this, Harry?
I have noticed this. I read about it on pocketgamer.co.uk.
Yeah, so this is a little bit alarming. Now, the first thing I saw was that they pulled a couple of games that were done by that Fire Monkeys crew. It was Mass Effect Infiltrator and the Dead Space game.
Mm-hmm.
The latter of which was quite good, the former a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
But still, I thought it was maybe something to do with that particular studio. The guys, I think they were also involved with Real Racing 3.
I think they... Yeah, it was like a combination of teams. Yeah.
That's right. But since then, we've got more. Quite a lot more. So I'll just read out some of them. Bejeweled 2's gone. Burnout Crash. Fly With Me, Lemonade Tycoon, Need for Speed Shift is gone, Real Racing, the first one's gone, The Sims Medieval, Skate It, like, quite a lot of games, including Flight Control and Flight Control Rocket, which is kind of sad, because...
The first Flight Control was incredible.
Yeah, like, the first Flight Control, which you probably look back now and go, oh yeah, a little touchscreen game, you swipe your finger to direct the planes onto the runway and everything, but... That was arguably one of the first games that really got what touchscreen gaming could be.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many games, we all know, try to convert PC or console games onto a touchscreen, and they put virtual controls and slather the screen in useless buttons, and it's really annoying. Whereas the guys who made the Flight Control just went, you know, actually, what touchscreens are really good at? Swiping. Drawing lines and swiping.
Swipe touching.
Yeah. So let's make a whole game about it. And it worked a treat and was brilliant. And now you can't get it anymore.
Can't get it no more. Oh, the second one, which was with spaceships.
Yeah, which was pretty good too. That worked as well. So obviously we were a little bit concerned, and we were wanted to have a word with EA and ask why. So EA has said, we are focusing our efforts on developing new and exciting titles, as well as bringing new content and updates to existing popular games. That's it.
So that's a lie. But, like, the second half of that is... demonstrably a lie.
Might be updating popular games. Not these ones.
Not these ones, though, no. I don't know, does it cost money to have them there?
Yeah, like storage money, you mean, like hosting,
yeah.
I suppose, because they've got to download the app from somewhere, from a server.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, is it that none of these games were doing any kind of business, so they just, like, bailed? Or are they about to kind of rejig the whole lineup? Are we going to see Bejeweled 3 and a new version of Need for Speed and a new version of Flight Control, and so they're erasing all the old ones from the history books?
We're not going to see a new version of Mass Effect Infiltrator or Dead Space. I mean, Mass Effect Infiltrator was tied in with Mass Effect 3, wasn't it? It was the global universal readiness thing that... I think we wrote... Mark wrote an article, I did a video about this... for Pocket Gamer about how, you know, a lot of games are just disappearing and you're not going to be able to play them. Part of it's about the throwaway, that still sort of concept of throwaway gaming that mobile gaming sort of has around it. But at the same time, you know, these are tiny little parts of gaming history that are being destroyed, essentially.
Gradually lost. Yeah. We were chatting about it on the podcast as well a couple of episodes back. But yeah, this is, as you say, little chapters of mobile gaming history that just keep being deleted or erased and potentially forgotten. Unless you happen to have an iPhone or an iPad with this game on it, at this point, you'll no longer be able to download it anymore. If you're a newcomer, you can't play Flight Control for the first time. And that's sort of sad. It's something that we said we're going to have to get used to. When we were talking about it before, we used the example of what happened to PT, the Silent Hill teaser, which apparently, and I can still work mine because I booted it up without allowing it to be on, without connected, because I'm terrified the servers go, hey, up, you've got one of them, and switch it off and not allow it to work anymore. But people have been reporting that they've shut it down remotely and that the license has expired. And even if you've got it on your hard drive, you can't play it anymore. And that's really alarming. It's like, oh, don't take it away. There's literally, well, they probably have reasons, and I suspect they're legal reasons, financial legal reasons. But from our perspective, it's like, there's no reason to take it away. Like, we've got it already. Don't stop us playing a thing. It's doing no harm being there.
It's that extension of games as services, though, isn't it? Rather than as actual things that you own, which is, I think, the big distinction that the shift to a more digital-based economy and free-to-play has actually, you know, created, is that you don't really own the game, you're essentially renting it. Even games, even Call of Duty, you know, if Activision decided, I can't bother with that anymore, and shut it down, there is nothing you can do about it. That's the end.
And we've heard the horror stories with Amazon and people trying to pass on their Kindles and their book collections to like their sons or their daughters or something, and Amazon going, no, all these books that you own there, you rented them, they're licensed, and they're licensed to you, not your son, so we're taking them back.
Yeah. And didn't Danny have problems with an iPad that was someone who died, and then he needed to get the birth certificate to Apple the death certificate to Apple to actually prove that they were dead?
I've got that iPad in my kitchen. I've got a dead man's iPad in my kitchen, Harry.
Oh, God.
And I can't get into it. I'm sure it's got amazing secrets locked inside, and possibly the map to buried treasure. That's what I would leave on my locked iPad if I had to go. So when you hear of my passing, remember, go for the iPad.
Go for the iPad.
Cupboard under the stairs. That's where you want to start looking.
I'm writing this down.
So, as we mentioned before, Danny is off at the Tokyo Game Show, and that means revelations are happening. New newsy stuff is appearing, and we're reporting on it. Newsy stuff like Monster Hunter Stories, which has shown off a couple of new trailers for the game. Capcom has been whipping it out at the Tokyo Game Show. It is, as Chris describes it, a cute 3DS spin-off game from the Monster Hunter series. We covered it a little bit a while back. It looks kind of adorable. Yeah. Actually, because it's got beasties. We're watching it right now in the stream. If you're watching, little eggs hatching. It's got this very cell shaded, pretty look, and all the monsters. They're little cute little monsters that people are riding, and it's like, ah, I want to play this.
Yeah, I want to play it too.
This is how it's explained. Instead of a hunter that you play in the Monster Hunter series, you have monster riders, which are able to bond with the monsters, and that allows you to ride them. So imagine that bit in Avatar. Where he has tail sex with the flying horse, exactly. But a much more colourful, upbeat sort of thing, and without the sexual connotations that are a bit icky.
Very icky.
Yeah. What happens is, your monster rider starts off at a rider village. They have to pass a trial, and then they become a rider as a result. Once that, they get the bond stone, which is the thing they use to bond with the monsters, and they set out to explore the wider world with their own feline called Nibiru. And then things go horribly wrong.
Oh,
and
no.
You have to save the world. And But it looks well cute. And I am totally, totally up for it.
Yeah, it's got that sort of Pokemon vibe to it, I think.
Yeah.
That sort of, but in the Monster Hunter world, which is far more interesting to me because monsters are cooler in Monster Hunter.
Yes, I'm inclined to agree. And the lore and the world of Monster Hunter, say, can be a bit intimidating because there's a lot in it and there's a lot you need to know. And this is obviously aimed at probably a bit of a younger market and a more casual market. And if it's a nice way to introduce more people into that world, then I'm game. I don't know if it'll clash with Monster Hunter's quite hardcore sensibilities. Like, will it still be Monster Hunter, do you think, in this form?
I mean, And you know, I think we look at Monster Hunter as a hardcore game, and it is very difficult, and it's difficult to get into. But the actual gameplay of it, the core gameplay loop of it in and of itself is quite shallow. That just, you know, hour-ish long quests that fit into a train journey. This is basically what it was in Japan, wasn't it? That everyone on a train will place a monster, which is cool. I don't think having a different art style and a different sort of focus necessarily makes it less hardcore, or it's just another way into the series. And I think that's a really cool thing. And I'm looking forward to playing it if it ever comes out in the West.
In here, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be out on the 3DS in Japan sometime next year, 2016. We haven't got a Western version confirmed, but we'll see. The Monster Hunter games generally do all come over here. I don't know if there was one that took quite a while to head over, but like 4 was released pretty much at the same time, roughly, universally anyway, and has done pretty well, as I understand. So, like, hopefully, fingers crossed, to be able to see this one turning up. Full title, Monster Hunter Stories. Look forward to hearing more about that in the coming year. Okay, another game that has been hanging around in Japan, is going to be a Japanese flavor, obviously, Tokyo Game Show, is Final Fantasy Agito, which I actually played on one of the PG streams. So it is a mobile-focused interpretation of the game that existed on iOS and Android. I played it on iOS. You are kind of like a school student, and you spawn in the school, and you have to run around going to classes, and classes largely consist of training to fight monsters in a standard Final Fantasy way. It's third person running about kind of thing, so it's not the top down thing of like a Final Fantasy 7 or a Final Fantasy 8, and it's more akin to the newer versions of the series. And the fighting seemed quite stripped back actually when I played it, but it totally worked, and I was like, I'm happy to see this, because we've had a lot of versions of the old Final Fantasy games ported onto iOS and Android. We haven't had many that have actually been made for it. They made Final Fantasy Dimensions, which was a chapter-based one, but that, again, was just pretty much emulating the old style, the Final Fantasy 4, 5, 6 style. And this was proper new. And so we were like, hey, this could be fun, but...
Nah.
It's going to be killed. It's not going to be released after all that. It's been in Japan for a little while. I guess it hasn't done great because they are killing it and they are not bringing it to the West.
Oh, well.
Did you ever get to play it? Or
no.
You went first?
No, not that first. I don't. I'm sure Final Fantasy games are nice nowadays, but I just don't have the time. I quite like Chaos Rings. The third one especially was good.
Although kept crashing. And you
apart
up,
from
kept
crashing and then, yeah. If it didn't do that, though, I think it might have been quite good.
yeah. So the announcement came a while back, but what Square Enix have recently revealed this week, in fact, is that it's going to be air quotes reborn. Now, apparently, what that means is they're doing a lot of tweaks and changes to it. It's under development to provide a better experience for the game. It's also going to replace the cancelled PS Vita version, we reckon. That's not been 100% confirmed, but that's what we think will happen. They said ages ago the game would definitely be heading to the West, and then obviously it didn't happen and it's collapsed in on itself. So we're hoping that the same thing still applies. This reborn version will land over here on our iOS devices and hopefully the PS Vita stuff too. It's technically a follow-up to Final Fantasy Type-0, which was that free-to-play RPG, which keeps getting posted into my bargain site that I look at. They're always trying to give us like copies of Type-0 that was released on one of the consoles, PS4 and that. Fingers crossed it will appear. I quite liked the little time. I spent about an hour and a half playing it, and I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it and understand what the hell is going on, because it was all in Japanese.
I mean, I suppose if they're pulling it to make a better version, then that's all right.
That's promising.
That's all right, man.
I'll take that, and I hope they are genuinely doing that. They're not just going, oh, we screwed up.
Hey, when we're putting a new version up on it, hey, look, what's that over there? Run away.
Okay, sticking with the Final Fantasy theme and the Tokyo Game Show stuff, more news, last one, I promise. Squeenix has announced a 3D remake of Final Fantasy Adventure. Now, have you heard of Final Fantasy Adventure, Harry?
No.
Ah, right. Well, you might have, actually.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Correct answer. So, no, it's got a bit of a weird backstory to it. So, as Chris explains, right, Final Fantasy Adventure, as it was called, was released on Game Boy in 1991.
Okay.
In Europe, we got it as Mystic Quest.
Oh, still not heard of it.
Okay, well, stay with me.
Okay. So,
it's actually a Final Fantasy spin-off game, and it is better known, or you might know it better, as the first game in the Mana series.
Oh, okay. Yep. No, nothing.
So, yes, you do. So, the game that came after it in 1993 was called The Secret of Mana.
Yeah, I know that. I think I reviewed it. There we go. Did I review it? Not then, obviously. I was like...
No. Not on the SNES.
10. I probably could have reviewed it on the SNES. I'm pretty cool.
You're a pretty literate 10-year-old. You would have busted out the Harry Slater 7 out of 10.
Actually, no, in my defense, I did start a video games magazine at my primary school. So.
Did you?
Yeah, it was terrible.
Oh, no. Hang on.
We all had Master Systems, so we just started this terrible handwritten Master System magazine. And it was basically just tips and cheats stolen from other magazines.
And what was it called? Can you remember?
I think it was just called Master Gamers.
Master
Gamers. Yeah.
That's bold.
Yeah.
And when you say handwritten, are we literally talking you were writing it in workbooks and then sellotaping it together, or did you have a photocopy printer thing going
on? No, just wrote it out on folded sheets of
A4. Oh, wicked.
Just like an A5. Yeah, and we couldn't do screenshots either, so we just drew the screenshots.
Well, you sit there with a biro copying out images of, like, Sonic and that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, that's... I don't suppose you kept any copies, did you?
No, I don't think so, no.
Oh, that would have been wicked.
No, my parents just moved house and they didn't give me any, so I'm going to guess. No, they're all gone.
Are you covering up for the fact that they burnt them in shame? For?
No, it was... Yeah, probably.
All right, well, if you do get a finer copy of that, everyone look out for Master Gamers. If you find one lying around somewhere, yeah, do send it to me.
It's probably worth, like, 10p now or something.
So. At least 10 pence. So, the reason this is being released now, this Final Fantasy Adventure rejig, is because it's just about to hit the Secret of Mana's 25th anniversary. Next year it's going to happen, so that's why they're doing it. It's going to keep the same story as the 1991 original. Obviously, the visuals are going to be tweaked and overhauled and everything. And the guy behind it, Kenji Ito, the composer, is going to be doing a remastered soundtrack. So that's something to look forward to if you're into all of that Final Fantasy Extended Universe jazz. Right, let's go to the West now. Move away from Tokyo, cool as though it is. Five Nights at Freddy's. So we're up to the fourth one now. All in the space of about a year, Scott Cawthon's churned four out, and there have been criticisms of the games that perhaps they're a bit samey, and perhaps maybe he's making loads and cashing in on it when there's perhaps not a lot of new content to offer.
Now, some might suggest that, James.
Some might suggest it. I don't 100% agree with it. I think fair play to him, but they've announced the next game, and... In fairness to Cawthon, it sounds like they are going a drastically different route. So, the next game is going to be an RPG.
Oh, good. I like those, maybe.
So, he's turning the series into an RPG. It's going to be called Five Nights at Freddy's World, or FNAF World. Yeah, according to him. Is there a problem with that, Harry? You got a problem with FNAF?
FNAF World. I don't know. I just think maybe there is some... Yeah, no, it's fine.
Perhaps a better acronym than FNIF.
FNIF.
Yeah, so what he says you'll be able to do is create a party using a selection of characters from the FNIF games, including the classic Withered Toy, Phantom, and Nightmare versions.
Good.
He reckons he's going to have a demo of the RPG ready for Halloween. So he's not letting up in terms of the speed of production then.
Well, no, I mean, they're not exactly renowned for their polish, are they?
But I would have imagined that an RPG would take a bit more time than the other games, do you think?
It depends what kind of RPG it is. It might be a real little one. He might have been working on it for years. It might be, I don't know.
An itty-bitty one, the way you are just exploring the house or just that place again, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I don't honestly care. Like,
you're not that fussed by the series, are you?
Not really, no. It was. I don't know. Like, I understand the why people like it. It's one of those, you know, YouTube games, isn't it? That sort of captured a particular point in the video game criticism zeitgeist, where people just scream at the camera.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
And fair play to the guy. He's made quite a lot of money off it. He obviously... I don't know if maybe he's spreading it a little too thin now.
With the upcoming movie and probable theme park, I imagine, that'll follow.
It'd be kind of ironic if it did end up in a Five Nights at Freddy's themed restaurant where the animatronics did go mad.
It would be beautiful.
Almost like, a Scream-style twist to it all, but in the real world. I would be up for that as well.
That would be great. I don't think it's going to happen, especially not with the time. It would be a restaurant knocked up in about 2 months.
Yeah, it'd just be from the ground up. It'd be a pizza restaurant, but they just have bread, triangular sliced bread.
That would be all you get. It's going to be coming, this new game, FNAF World, to PC, iOS, and Android. There's no specific release date yet, but as he says, hopefully a demo of the game prior to Halloween. So look forward to that. Now, before we go into new releases, let's talk a little bit about iOS 9.
Okay.
So, I haven't actually downloaded it yet.
I haven't either, because who the hell downloads iOS updates the day they come out?
Well, this is going to be, I've been burned in the past, so I haven't. I think Mark's been using it before, because he's got access to the dev build of it.
And whatnot, yeah.
And because he's been using it for a while, he has knocked up a handy list of compatible apps and hints and tips on how to use all the new features. Features like the slide over feature. So, you know that sort of snapping thing that you do in Windows 7?
Yeah, I'm aware of it.
We can have two things on the screen at the same time.
Yep.
They've never really been able to do that with the apps in iOS because of its app-based ecosystem. But now, you totally can. So, there are only a certain number of apps that are compatible with it. But if you are, for example, in the middle of browsing through something on Safari or whatever, and you think, you know what, I'd like to take a note about some of this browsing information.
I'd like to write down my opinions for a comment later.
Exactly. Let the record state. Well, what you could do is swipe from the side of the screen and a little kind of thin column will appear with a list of apps of the apps you can use as a kind of split screen. Not picture in picture, but a split screen setup. So you would tap the Notes app and boom, your notes would open as a thin column on the right-hand side. The app you were currently using, the one you were previously using prior to opening it, would be greyed out. So if you were looking at an internet browser, it would go boom and go grey. The notes would be highlighted on the right-hand side of the screen. It takes up around about a third of the screen, roughly. And then you could go into your notes. You can still see the information on the site. Type a new note in or something like that. Then when you're done with it, you click back on the left-hand side of the screen, the grayed-out area, and notes will go, whoop, disappear, and you'll be back to Safari again.
Yeah, it's basically what Samsung tablets have been doing for years.
I don't have a Samsung tablet. I've never had
one. Oh, no, they're awful. Never get a Samsung tablet. They are total dog poop.
But they did do this. You're saying?
It's something similar to it. Yeah, you can do it on the note as well. You can bring up extra apps and... Yeah.
Apparently, these things can pop up over the top of any app. So I know that it'll only be limited to a certain number. So we're seeing things like messages and notes and stuff like that will work. But you can use it over the top of pretty much anything you're doing. So that's kind of a nice feature. You will have to update your iOS, obviously, to specifically use this feature. And it's available only on the iPad Pro, iPad Air, or iPad Mini 2 and up.
Right.
So I won't be able to do it, for example, on my iPad 4.
I will, but it's probably going to be months until I update to iOS 9 because I just keep forgetting. I just say I only use my iPad at work, and when I'm working, I need my iPad. So I can't really have 2 hours to update it.
So another feature you'll get is picture-in-picture video, which allows you to watch a video outside of the original app. So what you need to do is if you're watching a video or something, so for example, you're watching a movie in your movie player, I think this only works in the Apple video player. So you couldn't do it with YouTube or something. But say you're watching that, you've got a video downloaded, you're watching away. All you'd need to do is tap the home button while watching the video and then press the pop-out button on the video player and boom, it would appear like lower right-hand corner of your screen and you could go about your business and do other stuff as well while you're watching the thing. Again, stuff we've had available to us in PCs and that for a while, but a handy feature. Do you ever use that feature?
No.
Yeah, me neither. I used to, back in the day, when I first got a decent LCD TV, it had a picture-in-picture function.
Yeah.
I thought, that's amazing. So what I used to do, because I had my PC connected up to my main TV, I would be using the PC, browsing away at stuff, and I would drag in terrestrial television in a little box so I could have the news on or something playing away. And that was when I first did it. We're talking like sort of 7 years ago. But yeah. Now everything's all iPlayer and live streaming, so you can just have it open in the PC window anyway.
Yeah.
So it was never as useful.
I'm sure some people use it, and that's good for them.
Yeah. The official YouTube app won't work with this right now. I imagine it might be updated later down the line, so that'd be a good thing. You can move around the window and resize it with a pinch or whatever if you want to, but it's available. It's available there. You've also got split view. So this is proper full-blown multitasking, whereas that the first thing we talked about is just swiping up and using a second app. This one is only available on like iPad Air 2 and up. And like basically the iPad Pro, because this is going to tax your processor. What you do is you pull out the app in the slide over feature we talked about above. And then if both apps support the split view, a little handle will appear in between the two apps. And you can just grab it, drag it over to the center. And then it will do a full 50-50 split screen. And you can use both apps at the same time.
Good.
You're not going for any of this, are you?
I just think, you know, they're fine improvements to an OS that works quite well, so...
I like
this. I mean, I don't have an iPad Air 2, so... I mean, it's a nice idea, but again, it's obviously aimed more at the productivity end of the market.
That's
which is
true.
What, obviously the big push that Apple's going for with the Surface. I mean, the iPad Pro. it's fine. Good.
I'm quite up for it. For me, the split-screen thing on Windows was the big head-turner. Like, and it's such a simple thing, because I used to spend ages like dragging it to halfway and then dragging the other one to halfway on the old Windows.
Been able to go, poof, poof.
Just the snap-snap thing, two things. That's how I run my life, is with two windows open at all times and then tabs and both. So for me, having this availability on the iPad, especially if you're talking about the iPad Pro, which is significantly bigger, as a screen, and that makes it even better to use those two separate columns. I'm well up for this. I think this is a cracking thing.
I'm not denigrating it. I don't know if that's the word. I'm not going to use it for games.
No, but I'd like to see someone trying to play the two games at the same time.
That would be good.
With the one hand each. That would be in the speed running kind of high end people doing arcade challenges on the internet. Someone will start doing this, and it'll be like Angry Birds over one side, Temper on the other, and you'll be going.
It's just like Flappy Bird on both.
Oh my!
Wait, how could you do that? You couldn't do that. But Flappy Bird in a game like Flappy Bird.
Sure, why not?
I'm sure you'll be able to find one of those on the app.
We suggest you check out the list of apps that are compatible. We've got all the details over in Pocket Gamer. If you're about to update to the system, Mark's been using this for ages now, so he's got all the little secret hints and tips you need to get the best out of your new OS. So do go and check it out. Rather than going straight into Out and About this week, we're going to do a little bit of extra business, which will only happen once, so don't worry. But we've just hit 5 million views on Twitch.
Yay!
Thank you for the one-man applause.
Yeah.
Love it. Brilliant.
Well, tell you what, I'll clap, and then you can just copy and paste, like, do it multi-tracks. And...
All right, there we go. Yep. Thank you, Harry Slaters. That was great. Yeah, so we started streaming on Twitch last year. It was only just over a year ago we started it, and we were doing like one thing. We did a test, and we did it like once a week for a bit. Then we started doing it like three times a week, and then we went to 5 days a week, doing it every day at 5 p.m. in the evening, if you're in the UK, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 midday Eastern time. It was me and Peter at first, and then that expanded out to me and Peter and Harry, and me and Peter and Danny and Harry, and it got more and more and more. And we start getting pushed to the front page. And it's just sort of... We were talking about this before. It's just sort of happened. It accumulates over time. And we just kept doing the thing and streaming and stuff. And sometimes you get like 50 or 100 subsequent, you know, concurrent views. And sometimes we've wound up with thousands and thousands. And that's all added up to 5 million, which is a stupid number that I can't really make any sense of.
No, it's like I can understand five things... because I could fit them on the table in front of me.
Yes.
But I don't really understand... there's probably 5 million atoms in the table in front of me, but I can't see them.
No, it's difficult. It's difficult to comprehend it.
I guess what we need is the 5 million people who've watched us to send us pictures of themselves.
Yes.
And then we can have them all in front of us in like a giant terrifying face collage to remind us of how we should be humble.
I genuinely would suggest you do that. If you are a viewer, all right, because we are live on Twitch right now. If you're listening on the podcast, we do always do it live on a Thursday. And you're a regular viewer, you guys have been watching for ages. Or if you're a podcast listener and you're like, you've been contributing in some way, send us a little mental photo. Send it to podcast@pokgamer.co.uk. I believe that's the email address.
I think so, yeah.
Send us a picture. What we'll do is we'll turn it into a massive mental collage and we'll do a little video of it as well as a kind of thank you all for watching and thanks for getting us to 5 million. I find it strange that 5 million people have looked at this little crappy bookshelf I've got right here.
And like, I've seen various places in my life where I've hung up washing.
Yes, yours is the 24-hour laundry show we've got. Yeah. But we're obviously incredibly grateful to everyone who's watching and everyone who's listening who might also have watched at some point. So thank you, and cheers. That's lovely. Anyway, out right now. So let's go into full-blown MMO mode. Order and Chaos 2 Redemption.
Yeah, that's out.
It's proper out right now. iPhone, iPad, don't know if it's on Android.
I think it's Android in some places, but I don't know if it's out in the UK yet or if... Maybe it just wouldn't show me it was out because I don't have a powerful enough thing to run it on.
So if you're not familiar, it's a sequel to Gameloft's actually quite popular MMO. So it's their version of a Warcraft or something like that. That's clearly what it was when it started. It was
ever so slightly totally ripped off Warcraft.
Very, very much so. So I played it yesterday live on the stream. It had only been alive for a couple of hours and it was surprisingly stable. I thought it was going to be all over the shop.
It's quite stable. I'm reviewing it in a slightly different way. So we're doing like a review diary, because obviously it's a massive game. We have to get deep into it, into its core, into its soul, and suck out all the bits of it that tell us what it is.
The juicy info marrow.
That's the official PG reviewer's guide term for it. So I've put about, I think, probably 3 or 4 hours into it now.
Okay.
It's lovely looking, but some of the draw distances are just terrible, to the point where I have backed out of a fight, like, because I'm a ranger, obviously, because rangers are the coolest.
You're wrong, like, carry on.
Mages, whatever. And you're, like, backing out firing arrows. Pew, pew, pew. That's the arrow firing noise for anyone listening. And then when the sort of... The bad guys get a bit too far away, they just disappear.
Oh, right.
And then, I've taken half of their health off with my crazy arrow firingness. And then I walk back to go, like, guys, thought we were having a fight. And they respawned at full health again.
Oh, really? Like, oh.
What? So that's I have to do weak. It again. But other than that, I'm actually enjoying it. It's less derivative than the first one. It's less obviously. Well, let's just make Warcraft, but for phones. There's a different feel to it. It's a bit more action orientated, I found. And
it gets you stuck in straight away. Yeah. I noticed it throws you right into it with a little kind of prologue thing. Yeah, where you have to smash a thing with a hammer.
It felt a bit sort of not quite Dragon Age-y, but more towards that sort of style of RPG rather than the... I mean, obviously it's going to have grind and it's going to have all that nonsense. But I'm quite interested to see where it goes with it. So keep watching Pocket Gamer for my review, which will grow and grow until eventually I go mad. And just start bibbling on about nonsense, because that's what happens when I write diaries.
That's what we do. So just for, if you are thinking of downloading it, it is a big game. I think it installs at around about 2 gig or something.
Two and a half gig.
So it's a big one. You've got a few things that are new in the game. So there's a new Cretan race, which is a great big bloody dragon lizard looking
thing. Dragon lizards, that's what I am.
Basically. And there's a Blood Knight class, which is also new. And obviously you're going to wind up with loads and loads of quests, mostly involving go over there and hit that thing until it drops a thing. And come back and then tell the man and he'll give you a rabbit or something. I don't know.
MMO, and then you put the rabbit on your head and it's a magical rabbit.
Oh, amazing. So it's obviously free to play. You can grab it on iPhone, iPad, and I think Google Play right now. Order and Chaos 2 Redemption. Go get your MMO fill. Now, Raceline CC.
I was going to talk about this later, James.
That is what I was thinking. Yes. Right then. We shall gloss over this right now. But yeah, much to be said on that one, I suppose. Stranded Mars 1. Have you played this?
I have not played this. I have farmed it out to other reviewers for I am lazy. And that sounded like I was going to say something else after it. But I wasn't. No.
Okay, so it is an auto-runner, pixel art in which you take control of a little astronaut dude who is charging across the face of Mars. It's sort of half-platformy. It reminds me a little bit, actually, of the Rayman Jungle Run in terms of you can do the wall-jumping stuff and you do the slidey under and you know can jump. And if you jump after a while, when you gain more abilities, your jump turns into a jetpack boost so you can hover in that way that the Rayman could fly by twirling his little head around.
So you're saying it's Rayman?
No, not really, because Rayman's really good.
Nah.
And this is not that this is bad or anything. It's got a kind of slidey momentum thing going for it. So it takes a little while for him to pick up speed. And then once he's done so, you feel like you're being propelled along. And if you try and stop or turn around, he does that kind of where you scrabble. If you've ever seen a cat try and change direction on a tiled floor.
I have.
At speed.
I make sure all the floors in my flat are smooth just for my entertainment.
Polished and waxed to ensure. Yeah, I've seen it and it's very, very funny. So it's a little bit like that. The way that Mario takes a few little runs to get started and he skids to a halt as well. So it's a little bit like that. There's a 3-star system. You've got 40 levels. You're supposed to go as fast as you can. The look is fine. It played okay. It didn't exactly blow me away or anything because it is another one of these. But it's a sort of smartish looking one. You can get a bunch of new astronaut dudes as you go and get some power-ups and whatnot. And there is also an async multiplayer feature, so you're just chasing your friend's time so you see their ghosts and that. I've seen a lot worse. Stranded Mars 1, it's called. It's free to download. I think you can get rid of adverts, but it was really unintrusive with its ads as well, so that's a good thing. We played a bunch yesterday that had ads every 50 seconds. It did me head in, but yeah, go and have a look at that if you fancy it. Gravity Ducks Islands. So this is a sequel to Ravenous Games' Gravity Duck.
Yes, Gravity it is. Duck. Gravity Duck singular. Yeah. Or this is just one duck.
Which I played and was one of the less impressive Ravenous Games games, I thought. If you've not played it before, it's, it is literally...
Isn't it basically...
Yeah, it's a bit only you can change all directions. So you're a duck, you're in an environment, side-scrolling platformer style-y, but you can tap on the screen and it will invert the gravity so it goes onto the ceiling. Likewise, it'll also invert to go on the sides, I believe, so it can go onto the walls as well as the ceiling. And that's how you play the game. And this new one has got actual variety in it, which is something that was criticised in the earlier game, as Rob points out in the review that he did. So you can... It's in the first level of the game, for example, you touch a button and it inverts gravity. It's a gravity button. In the second stage of the game, it becomes an inflate button. And in the stage after that, it becomes a teleport button. So it's not just Gravity Duck, it's also Teleport Duck.
Teleport Duck. I like that. I would play that game.
Yeah, so it's changed up a few things. Rob's kind of come away with it giving like it's got more variety and all that, but it's still not as fun as the rest of the games they do. So he describes it as a bit lifeless.
Maybe Rob and Mark don't maybe have a difference of opinion to me when it comes to Ravenous Games.
Yeah, me too. I've noticed that. They're a bit lukewarm on it.
Yeah, they don't have any joy in their twisted souls.
Apparently not. Which is sort of a shame. So that's available right now. I think it's 79 pence.
Usually they are.
Round about that title.
Let's say it is, and if we're wrong, well, you can shout at us all you want. You're listening to this on a recording.
Yeah, we will be asleep at the time. So yep. Gravity Duck Islands, that's available right now. Pixel 8 has come out too. I didn't play this one, but I can tell you that it's another one of them Picross games.
Oh,
where
good.
You, if you're not familiar with the genre, then you have to uncover blocks in a massive grid in order to make shapes or like images or
patterns
something like that.
And images and things. Yep.
Yep. So you get given a blank canvas and a bunch of colours, and then you have to copy a painting.
You've got numbers and stuff,
haven't you? Yeah,
you do. Yeah, it's all numbers for the filling in the rows, and like it tells you stuff and things, and they're all basically the same.
Yeah, it's 2D one. They did some 3D versions, I think, that were available on like the 3DS. There's a popular selection of them. It's another one of those. Haven't played it before. They're simple games. They can be fun. Mark, I'm sure, hates this one.
Yes, he will.
Mostly because of journalistic integrity, but also probably because he made one of these games
himself.
He did
make one of these himself. And you should make me play it if you like Pitcress games. But we didn't suggest that, because that would be hideously corrupt.
Exactly. But you can download this one. It's called Pixel 8. It's available right now. What else have we got here? We've got... Oh, yeah, a bunch of stuff I played. So, Super Monkey Boost. No. Super what? Boost Monkey.
Super Monkey Boots.
Yeah, no, don't. Because, obviously, they would never want to trick you into thinking that it had something to do with Super Monkey Ball.
You mean the greatest monkey rolling game ever created?
Yes, so they have moved the word super and monkey apart and jammed a new word
that is
in
the worst font I have ever seen.
So it's kind of like a 3D version of your Jetpack Joyride, really. So the monkey's got a little like twin copter thing, and he's flying down the hallways of what look like a laboratory, and you have to collect bananas. You tap on the screen and he jumps up in that Jetpack Joyride Flappy Bird kind of way. And you have to avoid scientists, much like, or hit them on the head, much like Jetpack Joyride again. And
so it's Jetpack Monkey Joyride,
kind of, yeah. And it's a little bit shonky, to be honest with you. I played it. I went down a corridor which was just black, and then the game crashed. And then I played it some more. Went up a different corridor, and then the whole iPad crashed and reset itself.
I like the sound of it. I like a bit of glitch in my games.
But in the meantime, it wasn't like offensively bad or anything, but like the level design was sort of a bit weird, because it's just these huge corridors and you have to jump over these banks of computer monitors, which seem to be like they're contained rooms. Like there's no way out for the scientists that are in there. Like the level design makes no sense.
Yeah.
They've just put a wall up and then another wall, and they've painted a computer bank on it. And look, I'm not asking for realism out of a game called Super Boost Monkey, who's got a flying monkey in it. But at the same time, consider your game
if
world.
If you want the best piece of entertainment involving a flying monkey, then you should watch the Matthew Broderick film Project X, in which a group of monkeys literally fly a plane to freedom. And I just spoiled the ending for you. Sorry.
Spoilers, but it was 30-something years ago, so deal with it. So, yeah, Super Boost Monkey, says I. Cave Swing I played very briefly, which is a game where you fall down from one side of the screen to the other, but when you tap the screen, you kind of hook shot a little line out. It hooks onto the wall. You're kind of in a cave, obviously, from the title, and you're mid-spelunk, and then you're falling, and you swing, and you have to spawn it at the right time so you don't swing up into the ceiling and hit your head. It was a bit nothingy. The physics were a bit wonky, and too many ads, so that's available.
I've got a couple I could tell you about if you'd like, James.
Chuck them in, by all means.
We've got Polly Bear.
That was the next on the list. Good night.
Nah, see, I'm pretty smart, which is a game. I think it's by the Civcrafter people or someone.
Oh, is it them?
Yeah. It's basically Crossy Road, but with icebergs. As we were talking about things that don't make sense, if you fall in the water, you die, but polar bears can swim.
We pointed that out on the stream last night, Glenn and I.
You're a polar bear. Tough luck. But it's all right. It's not. That's the noise.
I'm not sure about... Because it's one of these like randomly generated things. Yeah. I feel that it's a little bit unfair at times. I feel like that there are moments where... You jump onto a one that's about to shatter, and then the next one's underwater, and you'll fall in.
And if you stay on the one before that. And then there's got like those blobs of goo that you get stuck on. You have to tap three times, but it takes you a while to work out. You have to tap three times. And then, apparently it has some sort of ecological message about not letting polar bears drown.
But it's obviously not that well informed, because...
Polar bears can swim.
Polar bears can swim really quite well.
Yeah, they're like terrifying underwater killers.
Exactly.
We should probably get rid of them.
Yeah, it should be...
Oh, no, because they eat fish. I don't like fish. I like polar bears more than fish. Keep the polar bears!
All right, yeah, keep them. They're delicious.
I've got another game to talk about as well. Or did you want to wrap? Okay.
No.
I've forgotten one. It's Starseed.
Starseed, all right.
Starseed, which is out now. I think it's out now. It's like a... sort of bullet heli shooter, but a bit simplified and a bit pixely. It's nice chunky graphics, and they're sort of like you fly around a spinny roundy.
I know
thing,
this.
And then you have to kill the thing at the end, and it's quite good. Yeah.
I totally saw this one. It was released a while back. It was called they had Starseed Origin that was originally out. Is that this one?
Or is this a different one? Hang on, let me have a look. Just get me out.
I reckon it is. Yeah, it's definitely this one. So Starseed Origin, it's called. Yeah, I had to go on this because we had a preview. You can go and see Peter playing it right now over on the Atspire YouTube channel. We had this before everyone. And it looks... It's basically a bit like Uridium.
Yeah.
That game, what was on the Commodores. And it... Yeah, I really like the look of it. And I played it and I actually quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's not as sharp as the sort of crazy... proper bullet hell shooters, but it's got a nice tangy arcade tang. I would have a look. There'll be a review going up tomorrow on Pocket Gamer, I think.
Okay, it's £1.49 or $1.99. It's called Starseed Origin. Yeah, I'd agree with you. That would be probably maybe worth checking out there.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
Okay, Harry, you dive in and tell me all about a racy game.
Splash! That was me diving into a chair.
Oh.
What's on this chair?
Someone should really look at that.
Anyway, Raceline CC is not a racing game, not really, because it's like CSR but with two wheels and slipstreaming. But I actually quite enjoyed the time I spent with it. It's like it looks quite nice. I did a hands-on preview, I think, because sometimes I do those and get in trouble. It's one of those mobile games that. When people say all free-to-play games are bad, like, of this sort of genre, you could show them this and say, actually, they're all right. It gives you enough currency to keep filling up your tank, which is the energy system. Mm-hmm. It's quite nice to buy new bits for your bike. Essentially, you're riding a motorbike down a street. In a straight line, there are no corners. There are five lanes, I think, and if you tap left, you go to the next lane to the left, and you tap right, you go to the next lane on your right. Mm-hmm. And you need to slipstream the traffic. And there's sort of verging on, if there was music to it, it'd be Beat Mania, but it's not. A thing closes in on the screen, and you have to tap to go left or right as it closes in, and that gives you a big slipstream boost. Yeah. So you're basically chaining together combos of these... dashes behind cars in order to beat your opponent. There's like a thing at the start as well with like the rev counter, and you have to keep it in the green to start going. And that's basically it. And you do that forever if you want to. but it's you know, it's like a dip in, dip out thing. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's really polished. It's not horribly sexist like quite a lot of these racing games are, with all the boobs flopping around.
It is still your pit team is populated entirely by women in tight things.
Yeah,
they're slightly less cleavage.
There's not much cleavage, and one of them's a big angry man. So there's something for everyone, as long as you like thin women and big angry men. And quite frankly, who needs more than that?
I was quite surprised at just how CSR racing this is, because if you think about it, it is exactly CSR racing.
Oh, yeah, it's just the gear changes are slightly different.
The gear changes have been replaced by switching lanes at the right moment, but it's exactly the same thing. That bit you talk about where the little trackers come in from the left and right of the screen when you're about to slipstream, and if you hit it on the sweet spot, you change lanes, and boom, you get your boost, which is the identical thing of tracking the little revometer to hit the right point for a gear change in CSR.
But it's motorbikes, James, which are very different from cars.
Yes, by almost half the wheels.
Exactly. So, it is just... CSR. It's like it's an iteration of CSR. I think it would be better if it had official motorbikes, because I don't think any of these motorbikes are real, which is a bit disappointing.
Because
I wanted to, have a CB50 just bezzing down the road, making annoying noises at 2 a.m. But apparently that doesn't make for an interesting video game. And it's iOS 9 compatible as well, which is a thing. Apparently,
It's handy. It works on the iPad 4, albeit in a slightly jerky kind of way.
Yeah, it works on my fine without iOS 9, so don't worry about that.
Now, funny enough, I felt the same way about it, where I fired it up and I was like, oh, it's gonna be a racer, and I went, oh, it's not a racer at all, is it? That's rubbish, and I was a little bit disappointed, and then played it, and you go, oh, it's actually CSR racing, and then actually, it feels like you have a little bit more agency. It's kind of an artificial trick, because with CSR, you don't control the driving. You're just in a straight line. It's a drag race.
Yeah.
This is essentially a drag race as well. You're just dodging traffic to get out the way. But you are in a first-person perspective, and you are, instead of doing the gear shift, you're controlling when to dodge. So it does feel like you are contributing to the race a bit.
Yeah. It makes it feel a little bit more like an endless runner.
Yeah.
Just that lane switching thing just gives it a bit more cool, almost. Sort of as you dodge around that car, you've literally done nothing. You've just managed to tap the screen at the right time. But it does make you feel kind of like a badass.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I was all ready to get quite like down on it and go, oh, screw this. But yeah, it's not awful, actually. And you're right in the sense that it's... People say a lot of stuff about these games and how awful they are, and it's not terrible.
No, it's a 7. It's a 7 out of 10. And that's what it got, because I reviewed and gave it 7.
Right on. Okay, well, check out the review. It's available on the Pocket Gamer website right now, and check out the hands-on that you did over on AppSpy as well. I haven't really been playing a great deal. I've got to be honest with you.
James... Gilmore.
Well, no, I did. I played a bunch yesterday, and then I realised I kind of actually talked about
all of them. Yeah,
I should have thought that one through a little bit closer. However, I can say, and even though I've said it before, I am still playing Geo Wars 3.
This is the Geo Wars 3 podcast, the section.
Yes, pretty much. And I got to the point where I'm on YouTube looking at people doing the high score challenges.
Oh,
it's got to that level of interest.
Dear.
That's. But it's fascinating, like, because it looks so impossible. It's weird when you see somebody else playing it, because usually you're so transfixed and hypnotized, it requires such a degree of concentration, these shmups, that you're kind of focused and insanely on what's going on. But to be able to sit back in a relaxed way and watch it, you start to see tactics appearing. But also, towards the end of some of the runs, and they are going on for like 15 minutes to try and get high scores, and it gets so difficult, the waves get so dense towards the end of these long runs, that I actually find myself getting really stressed just watching it. And you're like, oh, it's got into me, Harry. It's dug in under my skin.
That's good. I mean, the Geometry Wars 2 did that to me. It was me and my friend Darren, and on his wedding day, we spent the morning just playing Geometry Wars 2, and we were nearly late, and also it was on my account, and he got his best ever score on it, and he was mortified for like a year afterwards, because he couldn't beat it, so it was like, my name was top of the leaderboard, even though he'd done it.
That's beautiful. He couldn't sign in as himself.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, delicious. I assume that you claim that victory as your own and rub it in his face every time.
Yeah.
Splendid.
That's what friends do to each other, right?
Awesome. Yes, well, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again. Go and have a look at Geo Wars. It's going to be cracking. I promise I'll play something more in-depth next week.
We don't believe you.
Honest. Okay, thank you all for watching on the Twitch stream, and thank you for listening on the podcast if you are plugged into iTunes and have got it in your ears. We're going to be back next week, probably accompanied maybe by Danny or someone like that. Peter's going to be away still, but he will return the week after that for a very special episode of the podcast. But in the meantime, thank you for listening and watching, and go have good weeks and enjoy your games. See you later, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.